This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a front, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, no words can describe what we're witnessing taking place in Gaza, and no one outside of the Strip can really fathom what it is like to be in Gaza and go through this Holocaust. 18 months of sheer madness and hell as billions of people in this dystopian world just watch while Palestinians are being starved to death, buried alive, beheaded, torn to pieces, burned alive, kidnapped and tortured. Just about every other sadistic crime imaginable has been committed against them by this U.S. Zionist genocide. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Mazen Ghomsai, Palestinian scientist and author out of Bethlehem. And Fra Hughes, journalist, author, and activist out of Belfast. Well, thank you both for being with me. Let me start this off in Bethlehem. I mean, Mazen, it gets just more and more difficult to talk about this every day. Of course, that's the very least that we can do when our Palestinian brothers and sisters are going through this sheer hell. Obviously, not only in Gaza, but we also were going to get into the West Bank, too. Now, Mazen, the regime targeted in the middle of the night a tent housing journalists that caught a fire and burned people alive. I mean, what does this mean exactly? People are being targeted who have been displaced, who are living in tents. And why journalists? We have 232 journalists, at least, that have been killed in Gaza since October of 2023. Why?
Well, this is, as you pointed out, this is unprecedented, and it leaves us pretty much speechless. I mean, it's very hard to even convey the level of horror. When you mention the number of journalists killed, in about a year and a half or less. That's more journalists than killed in the last wars in the past 100 years combined, even World War II and World War I, when you had all the journalists killed in them, you wouldn't get that number. And that's journalists alone. And then, of course, medical personnel. And, of course, children. This is targeting children because 50% of the Gaza population is children. And one incident, 8 of the 15 people killed were children. So this levels of horrors, levels of, depravity that the Zionist regime has gone down the road in with the support of Western powers, Western governments, is unprecedented in world history. And really, what can I say? I mean, as I said, it's very hard for me to articulate how frustrated and angry we are at the silence and seeing Netanyahu strut himself in Hungary, and now the U.S. right-wing fascist governments that support him.
Yes, indeed. Well, Fra, I mean, Mazen talked about the hypocrisy of these Western entities, but what about professional organizations? I mean, why isn't there more of an international outcry from professional journalist organizations regarding this targeting of journalists?
Well, I think the immediate answer that comes to mind is whoever pays the paper calls the tune. These professional journalists that you're alluding to, I don't know how professional they are. I thought the idea of journalism was holding truth to power. But what they are they are bought assets. They are very similar in their construction, and they are very similar in their attitude to the bought assets of the political systems across Western political society. These people who write for The Guardian, The Times, The New York Times, Le Monde, Die Welt, all these different prestigious international journals, they are all paid assets of the people who are their employers. Their employers are just as complicit as the Zionist government in covering up the murders of the innocent people in Gaza, the men, the women, and the children. So when we talk about journalism, and we talk about free speech, and we talk about holding truth to power, none of this exists. The illusion in the West that we live in a democracy is slowly being worn away by the resilience of the people in Palestine and Yemen and Iran, who show constantly that it is the naked hypocrisy, it is the lies, it is the propaganda. When we think that the first casualty of war is truth, what we're witnessing is a propaganda war by the mainstream media in the West to create the conditions within society here to allow some form of ongoing, almost acceptance of what is happening 4,000 miles away from Britain, God knows how many miles away from America. But while the mainstream media continues to lie, while it continues to defend Israel as if it has a right to murder innocent men, women, and children in self-defense, as it claims, we will continue to have a compliant media leading to a compliant society where people might rail against what's happening, but they're not even, I can guarantee you, I live in the West, and we are not shown the truth on a regular basis or a daily basis of what's happening in West Asia. We are constantly being bombarded with propaganda, state narrative, and the Israeli cover of anti-Semitism, where anyone who stands up for the truth and tries to expose these heinous war crimes. There have recently been 8 IOF soldiers who have returned to Britain who are British nationals. They're walking the streets free. These men should be questioned, arrested, interrogated, and prosecuted for the war crimes in Gaza. But they are walking free, and this is Western society and Western establishment showing its true face to the world.
Yes, indeed. Well, Mazen, earlier atrocities include the targeted killing of 15 medics who were assassinated by the regime. Now, the level of inhumanity is unimaginable, but continually happening on a daily basis. In your perspective, why is the regime so ruthless and targeting civilians and civilian infrastructure as it continues to do?
Well, Zionism from the beginning wanted to obliterate our existence in Palestine. That's a whole game of Zionism. They want the land without the people who come with the land. And even the land, they want to reshape it to fit their own agenda by destroying indigenous trees, olive trees, fig trees, almond trees, etc., and plant European pine trees. They want to make Palestine a European country without its indigenous humans, plants, and animals. This is the whole idea of Zionism. This is the whole idea of colonialism, of course, as practiced in what became as Australia or United States. So this is expected from colonialists, and it is also expected, of course, as pointed out by the other guest, that there are resistance to these, resistance actions to these plans of ethnic cleansing, genocide, ecocide, scholasticide, medicide, killing of it, trying to destroy. I mean, all the mosques pretty much in Gaza are gone. Three churches are destroyed, including third oldest church in Palestine. So this is expected. They want to destroy anything that does not fit their vision of a Jewish state, a Europeanized Jewish state.
Okay, well, Fra, the Israeli regime is starving people to death, beheading them, burying them alive, and so much more. We've seen people flying in the air due to the velocity of bombs exploding. I mean, when it seems the situation can't get any worse, as I said, in Gaza, then the regime does something even more sadistic. It has been given a free hand. What is its end aim, in your perspective? What's the end game for Israel?
Yes, well, what we're witnessing at the moment is hell on earth. It's the only way to describe what's happening on the ground in Gaza and indeed the West Bank. For people who believe in heaven and hell, for people who believe that hell is a place where people will be tortured for eternity, that's what we're witnessing in Gaza. That's what we're witnessing in the West Bank and in Lebanon and in Syria. But the end game is obvious. It is a white European colonial occupation of Palestine. We're witnessing total war. We're witnessing the use of armaments. We're witnessing the use of torture and brutality. We're witnessing the use of the destruction of the medical facilities, the infrastructure for the water, the fuel, and using starvation as a method of subjugation against the Palestinian people. The message they're sending is surrender or die, and if they surrender, then expulsion will be next. It is the plan of the colonizer to displace and then replace the indigenous population. So this is a scorched earth policy. What we appear to be witnessing now is that as they move the population around, they send the evacuation orders in order to clear field of fire, and then they go in and destroy all the buildings. So the end plan, whether or not they succeed is a different matter, is to leave no buildings standing in Gaza, to have the people not even living in tents or porta cabins, but to be surrounded by a military force that is shooting people at will with impunity and with the backing of Europe and the United States, America, and Canada. So the end plan is the total extermination or expulsion or extradition of the indigenous population. But we all know it won't end there. They want parts of Egypt, they want Iraq, they want parts of Lebanon, and they want to go as far as they can towards Saudi Arabia with Iraq's Greater Israel project. So the Palestinians now are fighting the same fascism that the Russians fought during the Second World War. They have been dehumanized, they have been slaughtered, they have been shot at for fun. The murder of those 15 humanitarian aid workers. As far as I'm aware, that was coordinated with the Israelis, that those ambulances would be allowed into that area to recover the dead and the wounded. That became a trap. Those people were lured in, and they were summarily executed. And the autopsies appeared to show that their hands were tied behind their backs. They were shot in the head at close range. And it's part of the psychological war that no one is safe in Gaza, no matter what part of civil society you're from. No one is safe anywhere at any time. They will murder the innocent. They will murder those who come as, initially as the first responders to help save human life, which is a natural human reaction to run towards the aid of others in distress, and then to murder the very people and medics who try to save them, and then murder the doctors in the hospitals who try to save what's left.
Right. Well, Mazen, you're in Bethlehem. You're about 73 kilometers from Gaza. Tell me, what is it like right now for the Palestinians on the West Bank in general? I mean, knowing that it's been over a month that the regime has not allowed any food supplies or aid in, and of course the 18 months that this has been going on, and now of course we are seeing increased aggression against the West Bank itself, but to know that you're just 73 kilometers from there and yet basically helpless as far as helping them.
Well, the situation in central Palestine, the West Bank, is unfolding similar to what happened in the Gaza Strip. And it's a slow process, of course, much less intense than what's happening in the Gaza Strip. But nevertheless, it's going on. I mean, just yesterday, they killed a 14-year-old Palestinian child who's a dual citizen, actually, a U.S. citizen also. And the U.S. didn't even flinch about that. This is in the West Bank. The destruction of homes continues in the refugee camps. In Bethlehem, where I live, is three refugee camps. They are being targeted, Aida, Azza, and the Haisha camp. And in the Haisha camp, the largest one, they came in and distributed flyers basically warning or threatening people that they will do to that refugee camp what they did to the refugee camps in the north of the West Bank and in the Gaza Strip, which is complete demolition of these sites. And you can see the pictures on your screen, of course, of what the Israeli military is doing. As it destroys homes, as it destroys livelihoods of people, as it impoverishes people in the West Bank. Similar, as I said, to what they had done in Gaza Strip, destroying infrastructure like roads and electricity grids and water supply and so on, but also homes and clinics and other facilities. So it is an unfolding horror that is going to expand to the West Bank at a much larger scale. So how do we feel in the West Bank? We feel, of course, trepidations and anger at the international community for this, their silence about what happened in Gaza, what is happening in Gaza, and what is happening now increasingly in the West Bank. The loss of our humanity, the loss of international law, basically the ending of the UN as a functioning agency and the ignorance of International Criminal Court and International Court of Justice rulings.
Well, Fra, do you think that the violence of the regime in the West Bank will backfire on it? I mean, as the attacks and the destruction of Palestinian homes will lead to more people joining the resistance, because basically there's nothing else that they can do, and increase retaliatory operations against the Zionist regime?
Well, we've seen very little retaliatory actions against the regime because the people are very limited, I would imagine. I'm sitting safe in my home thousands of miles, and I've been in Gaza in 2010 with George Galloway. I've visited the occupied territories on three different occasions. I've been to Aida refugee camp in Bethlehem. I've been to Nabi Saleh for the Friday protest. the people are very, very, very limited in their scope. I mean, they're facing the fourth largest army in the world. They have tanks, they have airplanes, they have artilleries, they have armored vehicles, and they have no conscience, no mercy, and no compassion. This is the people that they're facing. A very small armed resistance, like we've witnessed previously in Jenin, finds it very difficult to stand up against an army which is basically financed, armed, and then rearmed by the American administration. Let's not forget the 600,000 babies that died in Iraq under the sanctions, and then a million people murdered in Iraq by America and Britain in their illegal war. It's, you know, it's amazing that the resistance in both Gaza and in the West Bank can do as much as they are actually doing in the face of this murderous onslaught. So all we can do is, under international law, is to acknowledge the right that people living under occupation have to resist that occupation by any and all means necessary. So from 4,000 miles away, all I can do is watch almost helplessly what's happening on the ground in both Gaza and in the West Bank. And, you know, we're watching this unfold in real time, a genocide on our screens, a genocide on our phones. And our colleague is 100% correct. The impotency of the UN, it's all been shattered. All the illusions of the West talking about, military intervention to protect human rights in Libya when NATO bombed Libya, and the murderous death of Muammar Gaddafi. So the West is totally complicit in all this. The people in Palestine have the right to resist. It's potentially all they can do, but they're being corralled into smaller and smaller and smaller areas and being surrounded more and more and more by a merciless military onslaught, by people who are supremacists, by people who are racists, and by people who have no value for human life other than their own. If you're not Jewish and you're not a Zionist, they have no respect for the human life of the other, and no respect for the values of anyone who is not of their supremacist.
Right. Well, Mazen, tell me, what's the mindset of the young people that you're around in Bethlehem, in the West Bank right now? I mean, tell me, just give me the vibe, what they're saying.
Well, most young people in the West Bank are, of course, like young people everywhere. They long for a decent life, they long for jobs, they long for having their freedom to move about, to travel even. Most of them are not even allowed to travel 5 kilometers, let's say, from Bethlehem to Jerusalem to visit the holy sites or pray at their holy sites, whether the Christian holy sites or the Muslim holy sites in Jerusalem are off limits to us. So the young people are, of course, frustrated, pained, and angry, and they watch in amazement as the rest of the world, again, chucks these Israeli violations aside, puts them aside, and focuses on selling more weapons to that regime, giving more weapons to that regime, and protecting it from international law. The young people in Palestine, there were demonstrations actually today. Thousands of people were out in the streets, as there was also a strike to basically calling for a stop for this ongoing crimes against humanity. So our people, like those people you also see on your screen, internationals who are acting, our young people are also acting, although we are under more severe restrictions than those younger people in other countries. But of course, that's coming in other countries. Repression, as you know, in Europe and the US against young people protesting. Many students also lost their positions at the universities inside the United States for simply speaking out about human rights.
Right. And just I have just about 30 seconds. Fra, what message would you want to give to people around the world if they're not involved at all? I mean, what do you see as their responsibility in dealing with this genocide?
Well, people can't get involved in coming out onto the streets if they can't get involved in civil disobedience, if they can't get involved in trying to prevent arms shipments from leaving the different ports and airports all over Western Europe, then what they must do is BDS. What they must do is boycott, divest, sanction, and they must raise their voices, and they must stand shoulder to shoulder the people being oppressed and murdered in Palestine. So if you can't do anything, join the boycott movement and try to economically put some pressure on the Zionist apartheid nation state.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me. Mazen Qomsai, Palestinian scientist and author out of Bethlehem. Fra Hughes, journalist, author, and activist out of Belfast. Thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. Goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You are listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mahdi, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdu wa thana'a lillahi rabbil alameen. Wa salatu wa salam. Ala ashraf al-anbiya'i wa al-mursaleen. Habib qulubina wa tabib nufusana abil qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad. Respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. It's an honor and pleasure to be together and spend a few minutes on the great du'as and supplications of Sahifa Sajjadiyah. We reached to the 17th du'a in this holy book, in this great inheritance from Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, where Imam Sajjad alayhi salam is teaching us a supplication against shaitan. The very first part and the very first opening phrase to the du'a starts with this: Allahumma inna na'udu bika min nazaghat ash-shaytan ar-rajim wa kaydihi wa makayidihi wa min ath-thiqati bi amaniyyihi wa mawa'idihi wa ghururihi wa masa'idihi wa ghururihi wa masa'idihi. This supplication is a seeking of refuge in Allah from the evil of the accursed shaitan and his plots. It is a great supplication that we should say carries profound meanings. I just want to delve into explaining this very first phrase a little bit more. And then inshallah, we're going to focus on this session and the next few sessions on knowing Shaitan a little bit better. He says, O Allah, we seek refuge in you from the instigations of the accursed Shaitan. O Allah, a call to Allah is here, expressing supplication to him. We seek refuge in you, it means we resort to you and seek your protection, O Allah. And what are the instigations of the accursed Shaitan? The Shaitan's instigations are his whispers, suggestions, and temptations. And the accursed one is he who is expelled from Allah's mercy, from the heaven. That is, we resort to you, O Allah, from the Shaitan's or from the Satan's whispers and attempts to mislead us. And from his plots and his schemes. His plots, what are they? His plans and conspiracies and whatever he does in order to make an issue and trouble and an obstacle in the path of the growth of the Islamic Ummah and Islamic nation, whether it's in the individual level or whether it's in the social capital or in the social level of the Islamic Ummah. Let's take a quick break and come back.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
all right, respected brothers and sisters, we are together again, spending some few minutes of our time on the great inheritance from Imam Zainul Abidin. And we've been talking about the 17th dua of Saif al-Sajjadiyah, where he teaches us how to pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala against Shaitan and its plots. And we got to the part that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says, I seek refuge to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from Shaitan, the one who was ordered to leave the heavens and the Edens, and from not only from himself but also from his plots and from his schemes, his tricks and deceptions. That is, we resort to you from the Shaitan's plans and tricks by which he aims to mislead and to take us to go astray, and from trusting his false hopes, promises, delusions, and traps. Meaning that trusting in his false hopes and promises is in fact trusting in his lying promises and false hopes that would never come true, right? And that had a long story. If you read the Holy Quran, if you read the sacred manuscript, you will see that in the past, Shaitan has promised his friends, the ones who trust him, with false hopes and false promises, because in reality he's of no authority to make promises, right? But what he does at the end, the Holy Quran says, "Ala inna Shaitan yukhawwifu awliya'ah." What Shaitan does is that he scares his true friends, right? At the same time, he makes them false hopes and promises at the beginning, but later on he starts to scare them, right? It's that fear that is getting shed, that fear that becomes a part of our daily anxieties is most of the times instigated by the Shaitan. And most of the times, many of us are controlled by fear. And fear from anything other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is a false fear that we should avoid. His delusions, his deceptions and misguidance, his traps, his snares and pitfalls that he sets to ensure us. That is, we resort to you from trusting in the Satan's lying promises, from being deceived by his trickery, and from falling into traps. Meaning that this supplication, or this very first line of supplication, is a request for protection from all aspects of Shaitan's evil. And it warns us against it, right? Against what? Against few things. His direct whispers, his hidden plans and conspiracies, his deception and misguidance that make us trust his lying promises, and the importance of this supplication is becoming more clear to us, right? Because we are facing the great danger or the great threat from the existence of Shaitan, that we should truly maintain our faith against it, and we should continuously pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, seeking refuge to him from all the dangers and threats that are posed upon us from the Shaitan. Let's take another break, inshallah we'll come back.
Listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
All right, respected listeners to IRIB English Radio with the program Bridge. And that's last portion of this session. What I want to mention and wrap up, inshallah, is that what we should know is that Shaitan for us is the greatest enemy. In fact, the Holy Quran says, "As Shaitan is adubun mubin," is a clear, clear enemy. And therefore, once you consider or recognize someone, an individual, an entity, a community, a nation, right, depending on where you're standing, to be your enemy, then the way you deal with them is different. Number one, you don't trust them, right? Number two, you prepare constantly to confront with them, right? You don't sit aside and you do not stop thinking about how to avoid or how to avoid their dangers and how to defend yourself against them. So Shaitan is the greatest enemy of mankind. As we have mentioned in the past, that he has promised that he will not allow anyone to enter the heaven. He will try his best, him and his followers, him and his army. And he strives to mislead and tempt the insan. So therefore, one of the weapons that we have, one of the greatest tools that is accessible to us, is constantly seeking refuge to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from the danger of the Shaitan, from the temptations of the Shaitan, from his conspiracies and from his plans, right? Seeking refuge in Allah is the strongest weapon against the Shaitan. And this reminds us of our weakness and our need, our constant need, our need that gets renewed on a daily basis for Allah's protection. When a person seeks refuge in Allah, he asks for help from the one who is capable of all things. وَإِنَّهُ عَلَىٰ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٍ. That is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, where he is the Almighty, he is the All-Powerful. Therefore, it's recommended that a Muslim frequently recite du'as such as this 17th du'a. Pay charity on a daily basis. Try to avoid sinning and committing disobedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. All of which will, inshallah, avoid you or will get you into protection from the evil of the shaitan at all times, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mahdi, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا که کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
In a statement on the eve of Palestinian Children's Day on Saturday, 5th of April, the resistance movement Hamas says, among the Palestinian children massacred in Gaza, at least 274 were newborn babies and at least 876 were infants below the age of 1 year old. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of Oxfam International has covered this story and tells us more. An Israeli bombardment on Wednesday, 2nd of April, of an UNRWA clinic for displaced people in Jabalia in northern Gaza resulted in the massacring of 19 people, at least 9 of them children. In October of 2023, the United Nations regarded Gaza as a graveyard for children. The death toll at that time was 3,450. Now, according to the official data, the number of children martyred in the Gaza Strip stands at nearly 19,000. The unofficial figure is much higher. In a statement on the eve of Palestinian Children's Day on Saturday, 5th of April, the Hamas movement stated that among the Palestinian children massacred in Gaza, at least 274 were newborn babies and at least 876 were infants below the age of 1 year old. The resistance group noted over 1,100 children have been abducted in Gaza and around 39,000 have been orphaned, losing either one or both of their parents. Thousands of others face threats of famine, malnutrition and disease. After a 2-month ceasefire, which was marked by multiple breaches, the child-killing Zionist regime renewed its assault on the Palestinian children in Gaza. The head of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, Philip Lazzarini, in a post on X, formerly known as Twitter, warned that the resumption of the war in the Gaza Strip is robbing Palestinian children of their childhood, turning the besieged territory into a no-land for children. The Israeli regime continued its bombardment even on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, murdering Palestinian children who were excited to celebrate the festival after nearly 2 years of genocide. Videos circulating on social media show lifeless bodies of Palestinian children in new clothes and new shoes. They had anticipated a day of festivity after the culmination of Ramadan, the month of fasting. The UNRWA chief, Philip Lazzarini, wrote, "Harrowing, at least 100 children are reported killed or injured every day in Gaza since the strikes resumed." Lazzarini cited UNICEF figures. He said, "Nothing justifies the massacre of children." Recently, a 350-gigabyte file was released documenting Israel's genocidal crimes in the besieged Gaza Strip. The file contains around 70,000 videos and images of Israel that show the regime targeting children aged between 0 and 9, and also Palestinian women in Gaza. The video footage aligns perfectly with the figures released by the Ministry of Health in Gaza. According to the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics statement issued on 3rd of April, at least 17,954 Palestinian children have been massacred in the Israeli attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip, including 274 newborn babies and 876 infants below the age of one. The Palestinian Health Ministry recently released a 1,516-page document listing the names of over 50,000 Palestinians confirmed killed in Gaza since 7th of October 2023. There are a lot of 474 pages listing 15,600-plus children names in the list. On the first 27 pages of the document, the names of children which has been listed are all under 1 year old. At least 274 newborn babies and 876 babies who were not yet old enough to celebrate their first birthday were murdered by the Israeli regime. According to the data provided by Palestinian rights organization, the Israeli regime kills a child in Gaza every 45 minutes. That is an average of 30 children killed every day over the past 545 days. Israel's renewed offensive in the besieged Gaza Strip has resulted in the cold-blooded murder of more than 350 children in less than 2 weeks. According to a UNICEF statement issued on 31st of March, Israel has reportedly left at least 322 children dead and 609 wounded in Gaza over the past 10 days. The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, said in a statement, the figures include children who were reportedly massacred or wounded when the surgical department of Al-Nasser Hospital in southern Gaza was hit in an attack on 23rd of March. UNICEF said most of these children were displaced and sheltering in the makeshift tents or damaged homes. Ending a nearly two-month fragile ceasefire, the Israeli regime resumed its intense bombing of Gaza on 18th of March. The website Palestine Chronicle has also covered the same story. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, the devastating Israeli airstrike on Gaza in the early hours of 18th of March resulted in the massacring of at least 436 Palestinians, including 183 children and 94 women. Mohammed was one of 183 children martyred in Israel's renewed bombardment of Gaza. His mother was also murdered in the same attack. Alaa Abu Hilal, Muhammad's grief-stricken father, said she was 7 months pregnant when she was martyred. Karam Tafiq Hamid lost his three sons in the Israeli attack on 18th of March. Hassan was 9 years old, Muhammad was 8 years old, and Aziz was just 5 years old. Hamid was quoted as saying, "They used to play around, have fun, and most of all, they loved a ride with me and my tuk-tuk." The devastated father added, like other children, they had dreams. They wanted to become doctors and teachers. Dr. Saqib Rokadia, a British volunteer surgeon at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza, said he was shocked to see the number of children being targeted by Israeli soldiers. Dr. Morgan McMonagall, an Irish trauma surgeon who is volunteering at Nasser Hospital in Gaza, estimated that 40% of the dead and injured he saw were children. The United Nations Children and Armed Conflict reports show that the number of Palestinian children killed by Israel's genocidal war in Gaza over the last year is 5 times more than the number of children killed in Gaza between 2005 and 2022 in total. The record number of women and children massacred in Gaza does not include nearly 20,000 people who are either unidentified, missing, or entombed beneath rubble. Last year, a study published in The Lancet estimated the true number of deaths in Gaza could be over 186,000 and may include scores of children. In its statement on 5th of April, the resistance movement Hamas urged the United Nations and world governments to criminalize the occupation of Israel and activate its inclusion on the list of shame for perpetrators of crimes against children. On the eve of Palestinian Children's Day, on Saturday, 5th of April, the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics reported that 39,384 children in Gaza have lost one or both parents in Israel's genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip. According to statistics given by the Bureau, around 17,000 children have been deprived of both of their parents in Israel's genocidal war. In January, the Palestinian Ministry of Health reported that since the start of Israel's war on Gaza, 32,151 children have lost their fathers, and 4,417 children have lost their mothers. However, the figures have increased over the past few months.
Thank you.